Hi everyone, and welcome to this new episode of 20 Minutes pour Comprendre, the podcast which aims to help you understand international relations. I'm Vincent Gabriel, and as our listeners may notice, today we'll not speak in French, but in English, because this podcast is part of a partnership with the EUVIP, so the EU in the Volatile Indo-Pacific Project, which aims to help understand and raise awareness of the strategic, political, and economic significance of the Volatile Indo-Pacific region, and it brings together three European universities, Palaki University Olomouc, University of Helsinki, and UC Louvain. Today, I have the great pleasure and honor to receive Duncan McCargo. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you are a professor of global affairs at Nanjing Technological University in Singapore. You are also a visiting professor in the School of Politics and International Studies at the University of Leeds. And which is all the most important maybe for our episode today, you were in Thailand during the election for 6 weeks. Is that
yes,
so?
Yes, that's right.
And so we'll talk with you about Thailand, a country we have not yet covered in the podcast, so I'm very glad to receive you. For our listeners, so we're a Belgian podcast, they may be struck by some resemblance between Thailand and Belgium, because Thailand is a kingdom, there is a prime minister, and there is a bicameral assembly. But I have the feeling that it's not like the same. So in a broad way, how does the Thai state work?
Yeah, obviously it's a complicated country. As you say, there's a monarchy. There's also a couple of things that we should mention about Thailand. It has the world record for the number of military coups of any country in the world over the past 100 years. So the military plays an extremely large-sized role in politics. It also has a world record for the largest number of constitutions.
Okay.
So every time there's a military coup, they tear up the constitution and start all over again. And this has been going on really since 1932. So before 1932, Thailand was an absolute monarchy. It, in principle, is supposed to become, since then, a constitutional monarchy, but we still also see a very overt political role performed by the monarchy, too. So Thailand's got everything. It's got the military, it's got this monarchy behind the scenes, kind of, you know, expressing its views and somehow intervening in what's going on, and also very lively elections, like the one that I was privileged to observe this past May, with lots of political parties, lots of debate about ideologies and policies and personalities of leaders. So Thailand's really got something for everybody, but to sum it up in a couple of sentences is rather
really
difficult. It's a messy sort of intractable set of issues that really surround Thai politics.
Okay, great. Yeah. Maybe we can add also, we'll not talk about really the history of Thailand.
No.
But I guess we can say that it's one of the few countries in Asia that has not been colonized. Yes.
Yes, of course, I'm an academic, so everything is a debate.
Yes,
you're quite correct that it was never formally colonized. There is a debate about informal colonialism, but yes. So, you know, the standard trope is what Siam, as it was in the past, managed to do was to identify itself as a kind of buffer zone between particularly British and French colonial aspirations in Southeast Asia, as we now call it. So you had Indochina and the French colonies and protectorates on one side, and you had Burma and Malaya, the British territories, on the other. And Siam managed to maintain its independence through very complicated sets of negotiations, lots of changes of the borders and so on. But yes, this is the distinctive thing. There's no actual classic. Now, we can still use a post-colonial lens to look at Thailand, but it doesn't have a colonial experience in the classic sense that we typically imagine.
Okay, great.
Yes,
thank you.
Sorry, that's a very long-winded academic reply to an extremely simple yes-no question.
No, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I think there is like a structural opposition in the political life in Thailand, but you may correct me, between the yellow shirts and the red shirts. So what is all about and what is this opposition? What does it tell us about the political life in Thailand?
Okay, so I spend about 2 hours replying to that one. It is a really, you go right to the heart of the matter. This is a really important question. And again, quite difficult to summarize quickly. But essentially, what we had over the past almost 20 years in Thailand is a very polarized politics where people, many of them, lined up on one side or other of this color-coded debate. the color codes on one level are simplistic, but we have to start somewhere, and this is a podcast, and we only have a short time. So, executive summary, the yellow shirts are people who are associated with a conservative political position. They're very loyal to the monarchy. They respect and appreciate the role of the military in maintaining stability in Thailand, and they are very unhappy with a lot of the elected politicians who came along in recent years, who are represented by the Reds on the other side. So at the core of this red-yellow thing is the polarizing and complex mercurial figure of former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra, who was Prime Minister from 2001 to 2006. A European comparison might be to a kind of Berlusconi figure. Okay. He became very wealthy through his work in the telecoms business, although prior to that he was actually a police officer. So he moved from the bureaucratic sector into telecoms, became extremely rich, and then decided that he wanted to enter politics. He's widely regarded, even by his many detractors, as one of the most effective prime ministers that Thailand has ever had. He put his stamp of his personality on the politics in a way that nobody else has. But he was removed in a military coup in 2006, and until just a couple of weeks ago, was living mostly in exile, primarily in Dubai, during that whole period, during which, nevertheless, we kept hearing from him all the time because he was constantly popping up on social media and on Skype and on TV and things. So he managed to continue to shape the discourse. So the Reds are the people who supported Thaksin, and like the Yellows, at various points they took to the streets and held mass protests. So there were massive street protests in Thailand repeatedly, something I guess people in the French political tradition are familiar with, not so familiar to us in the Anglo-American political tradition. So in the Thai case, these yellow or red protesters would occupy huge swathes of Bangkok, occupy government buildings, at one point occupy the airport, major shopping districts, and you know they don't come out for a day or two. These protests would go on for months and months. So we had massive yellow protests in 2006 and then in 2008, and then kind of yellow-influenced protests in 2013-14. We had massive red protests in 2009 and particularly in 2010 when more than 90 people were shot dead in the streets, most of them unarmed civilians by the military. Okay. So red and yellow is a very complicated thing. At the same time, we're now, and maybe I can get onto this, moving beyond red and yellow into a politics of something else.
And yes, we'll come at this point.
Indeed.
Just one step before going into those politics, what's the role of the military in the political life of Thailand? We're already covered up in some kind of point of view, but if you can just address it directly.
Yeah, no, it's a really, really important question. So essentially, all these coups that we've had, the most recent coups were the one in 2014, before that the one in 2006. These coups are at least publicly presented, rationalized, and legitimated by the military as necessary interventions to save Thailand from itself, because politicians are inevitably corrupt and politicians are untrustworthy, unreliable, maybe disloyal to the monarchy, and need to be reprimanded and put back in their place, and the rules of the game need to be reclarified and enforced. Okay. So the military see themselves as playing a very, very important role in exercising veto power when, in their eyes, the political system starts to go astray from how things should be.
Can we make a comparison between what we are seeing like today in Gabon and Niger, or is it just like totally different, meaning the military would take power because they think the political systems is like not working anymore?
That certainly is a commonality of military coups all over the world.
Yes.
These are the rationales that the military use. Yes, that's right. In the Thai case, the presence of the monarchy complicates things because the military always argue that we're not doing this for ourselves, we're doing it for the nation and also for the monarchy. So that's the added complication compared to coups in most other countries. But yes, it's a variant on this classic theme.
Okay, thank you so much. So in May on this year, a lot of public attention was focused on Turkey because there were elections.
Yes.
But on the same month, there were also elections in
Thailand. Same day, indeed.
On the same day,
on the 14th of May,
There were elections in Thailand, and I think, at least in the French-speaking world, they were not very covered.
Right.
So can you help us catch up? What were the at stake in these elections? What were the force represented?
Yes. And again, it's complicated because there are a lot of different parties contesting the election, a lot of moving parts here. So I mentioned a military coup in 2014. That's a very important moment because at that point, a clique of generals, some of them retired generals, in fact, former army commanders, took power and managed to hang on to it for 9 years. And they hung on to it in two different ways. First of all, through a military junta, which was in power from 2014 to 19, headed by General Prayut Chan-o-Cha, who had been the army commander at the time of the coup in 2014. So he remained as prime minister for 5 years. Then there was an election in 2019, and that election effectively perpetuated the rule of this clique because General Prayut and his two principal sidekicks, two other generals, they came back to hold similar positions to the ones that they'd held before. So General Prayut, first of all, was prime minister. You know, people called him a dictator because he had seized power in a military coup. But between 2019 and this year, he was a prime minister who was at least notionally elected. He was associated with a political party, which, to confuse matters, he never joined because he didn't like political parties. But so he was very much continuing the same set of ideas that were behind the 2014 coup. So really what came to pass this election was people saying, we can't go on. They call them the uncles, these old guys, particularly two of them, and his principal sidekick, Prawit Wongsawan. The two uncles have to go now. It's really time for us to get beyond the politics of the 2014 coup and this nine-year period, and the latter part of which we had a parliament, but the parliament was very dominated by these conservative forces. So really, the question was, which party should you vote for, particularly if you feel that the uncles...
And that
was a big slogan in the whole thing. We don't want the uncles. If the uncles have to go, who do you vote for to get rid of them? This became a very complicated question because there were really two main opposition parties at that point. One was the Pheu Thai Party, which is the party associated with the former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra, who had been out of Thailand since 2006. They've always been electorally the strongest party in Thailand in recent times. They basically won every election from 2001 until this last election, although some of those elections were later annulled by the courts or came to a sticky end with a military coup or something else. But he won those elections over and over again, he being Thaksin, without being in the country for the most part. He and his proxies won those elections. That's because Pheu Thai Party has a very good reputation for delivering economic benefits to people and has been seen for many years as representing the interests of the masses, particularly the population in the north and northeast, which is the poorer and most popular areas of the country. Sorry, most populous areas of the country. This time, though, Pheu Thai faced a big challenge, and the size of that challenge became clear during the course of the election. So the big story of the election turned out not to be Pheu Thai, who had told everybody, we're going to win by a landslide and drive the uncles out, and then we'll be the government and we'll go back to where we were in 2006 when Thaksin was kicked out and everything will be good again because the economy will be back on track and da-da-da-da-da. Didn't quite work like that because people started to have doubts about what the Pheu Thai Party was doing. There were lots of rumours that actually the uncles and Thaksin
were friends,
more than friends. You know, they were basically in bed together, that they already had done a deal where they would form a joint government after the election. So was the Pheu Thai Party and Thaksin, were they really for the uncles or were they with the uncles? This became one of the big questions of the election. And then we had another party which came along, the Move Forward Party. So the Move Forward Party, what happens in Thailand is parties often get banned by the Constitutional Court. This is another peculiarity of Thai politics. But perhaps even more peculiar than that, after a party is banned, it can be reincarnated with a new name, but the same logo, the same colours, the same sometimes headquarters. Nothing really changes except a few of the names and the exact design of some of the branding. But people recognise it as the same party. So there was a very successful oppositional party called the Future Forward Party, which won 81 seats in parliament in the 2019 election. This party was very interesting because the leader was a young 40-year-old business tycoon who had no political experience, and every single one of the other 80 MPs who were elected with him had never been in Parliament before.
Okay.
So these are completely new, right? We are coming in to change the system. We're not associated with any of this old politics. Mm-hmm. So, because the old politics is red versus yellow. And
there is like a new family coming in, yes.
And the new one is orange.
Okay.
So if you used to be red, you can be with us. If you used to be yellow, you can be with us. Because we're orange. We're going to bring everybody together. So the Orange Party did very well, surprised the Thai elite, who were kind of terrified that they could win actually 6.3 million votes in 2019. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, the Future Forward Party, the Orange Party, was banned by the Constitutional Court on my birthday, on the 21st of February 2020. And then with a Thai colleague, we wrote a book about this party, which we wrote during the first COVID lockdown. That was very interesting.
Okay.
So that's a party close to my heart. What we saw in this election was the reincarnation of Future Forward as Move Forward with a new leader, another just
young man,
42-year-old guy with a business career and a Harvard degree, and yeah, looking very fresh and energetic, challenging the establishment and saying, if you don't want the uncles, forget about Pertai and Thaksin, because mm-hmm. they're already in bed with them. You need to vote for us. And do you want Thailand to be the same or not? So they campaign on a slogan of making Thailand not the same as before, which is kind of code for all kinds of things, including criticism of the military, criticism of the monarchy, criticism of the very, very hierarchical top-down power structures, mm-hmm. and also critical of the small number of companies that exercise a stranglehold over large sections of the Thai economy. So one of the other issues was demonopolization. There are a handful of very, very powerful Thai companies that have been becoming more and more monopolistic over the past few years, and their strength was growing during this 9-year period of the Prayut government that was very reliant on support from these businesses. So this was the thing. The election was really about, okay, are we sticking with the old guys whose popularity is falling through the floor? If we don't want the old guys anymore, are we going back to the people who we used to think of as the natural opposition people? Or are we going for these very inexperienced, totally new, very young people?
Okay, and who won?
Okay, so it all depends what we mean by win. Yes. But yes, we ended up with this Move Forward Party winning. The exact number changed a couple of times as the Election Commission recalculated the results, but just over 150 seats, whereas the Pertai Party got 141.
Okay.
So they beat the Pertai Party, which is this, you have to understand, this massive electoral machine with huge money behind it and huge power and huge name recognition going back over 20 years. They were thrashed, and so were other parties, by these people who had almost no money, candidates that no one had ever heard of, but their message was, we'll get rid of the uncles.
So there was like a real need for change.
Yes, their whole slogan was about change, and people voted for them. So 38% of the voting public voted for this party, with extremely inexperienced people, very mm-hmm. young, very idealistic. Some of the candidates, not particularly impressive, just almost random people that they found to compete. It didn't really matter because it didn't, you know.
They were new.
Yes, and it was really about the political positionality mm-hmm. of the party. It was also, let's be honest, very effective social media campaigning. And Pitar, the leader, is very good looking. He's like the ideal son-in-law that every upper middle class Thai family would like to have. So there was that kind of appeal to the party too. It's not just about policies and their political principles. It's also the very, very effective selling of the image of the leader and other key figures in the party, which is what Future Forward also did in 2019. Mm-hmm. So they've got a number of elements to their strategy. And when you talk to them, they say, oh, it's all about the policies, Professor. And you say, well, what about the pop star stuff? So when I talked to Tanator, the leader of Future Forward, he said, oh, the pop star stuff, Professor, that's only 5% of my appeal. Don't think so. Right?
Yes.
So quite complicated, but it turned into an election which really, there were three main choices for people. The conservative choice of, we'll continue with these parties that have supported this military line. And then, if we want to get rid of them, do we go back to Pertai mm-hmm. or forward with Move Forward? And, of course, Pertai did do well. They got 140 seats. They couldn't be ruled out. So,
and does it mean that now the new Prime Minister of Thailand is Mr. Pitar and the Move Forward Party? Or is it more complicated than that? Like, I would say, always in Thailand.
Absolutely, yeah, no. So what happened was that you would think. Now, of course, when we say that Move Forward won, what they won was the largest number of seats in a 500-member assembly, and the number of seats they won was 150. Mm-hmm. So it's actually just less than one-third of the seats in Parliament. It's not winning in the sense that, you know, we think of it like in British politics. Yes. You win the election, you win overwhelmingly, right? Mm-hmm. Like as Boris Johnson did in the 2019 British election, and can form a government with just one party with no problem. What we're talking about here is more, at the moment, European style of politics, where you've got to form a coalition. So how much bargaining power do you have as the slightly larger party? It's larger by 10 seats. Now, it's true that the size of their party list vote and the extraordinary way in which they came from nowhere, the performance of the party compared to last time, suggests an incredible momentum. But the actual result is not, you know, I met Pitar during the election. He said, oh, we're going to win the landslide, not Pertai. We're going to get 300 seats. Well, they only got half of what he told me they were going to get. So they did get a little bit full of themselves and slightly above themselves. But the real problem is Thailand has this rather curious constitutional clause at the moment, which was actually voted on in a referendum in 2016. People agreed that the Senate would have the right to take part in selecting the prime minister for the first 5 years after the end of the coup period. I don't think most of the people who voted for that question in the referendum understood it, because it was written in a very legalistic and confusing way. But nevertheless, there was a popular referendum where people agreed this. I think now if people were asked the question again, they would definitely say no, because they didn't really realize what this meant. So what this meant, in short, there are two houses in the Thai parliament, of which the lower house is much more important. But the Senate has this very important role in selecting the prime minister. So there are 250 senators and 500 MPs. So 750 can vote for prime minister. So essentially, to become prime minister, you need 376 votes. Problem there is, these 250 senators, where do they come from? Well, they were all appointed by the two uncles. And many of them are retired military officers. Most of them are unbelievably conservative.
So not really favourable for the Move Forward party. Yeah.
No, and Move Forward have particularly highlighted questions about changing the 112 law, which is a lèse majesté law about criticism of the monarchy. Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of, when you start talking about changing that law, then all these very conservative retired military officers start having a meltdown and say, we can't possibly vote for these people. So what happened was that although Pitar was nominated, there was supposed to be an eight-party coalition of opposition parties, previous opposition parties, including Pertai. They were supposed to be with Move Forward, United, Front, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. The Senate voted down Pitar's nomination. And after that, it ended up with, finally, a few weeks later, a second Senate vote. And Setar Tharisin, who was one of the prime ministerial candidates of Pertai, was appointed as prime minister, and Pertai has been assembling a coalition, which includes, surprise, surprise, the uncle parties, the military people, and some other conservative parties that don't have a very good public image, and which most people did not want at all in the government. So people do not have the government that they voted for. And Move Forward is now in opposition. And, of course, in a difficult situation.
Yes.
So, but, you know, for a few weeks, Pitar was looking like he was going to be Time Magazine Man of the Year. You know, there was all this international attention on this guy, and people were so excited by him. Really thought he was going to be Prime Minister. I've got to confess, I never thought he was going to be Prime Minister, because I was pretty clear that the Senate would do the kind of thing that they did. But, yes, it was, on one level, an incredibly exciting moment, and what it illustrates is incredible generational contestation and, you know, a continuing polarization right across the society. But certainly almost everybody under 30 thinks that Thailand needs considerable change, that it's time to kick out these military people and really to move on to a much more modern, progressive and future-oriented way of doing things. And then there are a lot of other people who say, no, we can't possibly go there, then we'll be losing everything that we value, and Thailand as we know it will collapse. And so these are the kind of scenarios. And then Pertai has opportunistically come in here and formed this government, but in the process of forming the government, they had to do a lot of compromising with various other prospective coalition partners. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much, Duncan Marcago. Thanks to you, I think our listeners will have the opportunity to catch up, like, all the political and recent news about Thailand politics. So thank you so much. And I will make in the description of this episode some of your publications and also media appearance, to make them, like, make your accountants and read more about this subject. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. It's been my great pleasure to talk. Yeah.